Buckle up. It's time for the Champions of Cinema podcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Champions of Cinema. I'm your host, Joe, and today, James, we've got a special one. What's happening?
We do. We are looking at the final part of the James Caan trilogy.
The final part.
The final part.
I think there's actually one more James Caan movie somewhere that's a sports movie.
Another one? Oh my God.
But I think we're just going to completely avoid it for now.
Yeah.
And instead, we're going to focus fully down on what possibly is one of my favourite movies when it comes to sports movies. However, before that, what's been going on for you? What have you been watching? What have you been up to?
Well, at the time of recording this, the Olympics have just started. So that's been sort of dominating my daytime television watching. I believe today we saw Daly win silver in synchronized diving, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Former passion of mine was synchronized diving. You know, I used to...
You were a synchronized diver.
No, I wasn't. I don't
just
think...
Trying to pass yourself off as a 6'5", uncoordinated, inability to bend,
just cannonball,
synchronized diver. Just
diving every time. No. Swam, never dived though, but no, it's been cool. I'm usually more of a track and field guy, but you forget the sports which exist when you watch the Olympics. So
yeah, I was saying to some people around me that the sports that I never watch apart from in the 4-year cycle of the Olympics. So earlier today I was watching some judo.
Lovely.
I was watching some amateur boxing. I was just like, yeah, this is great. And why don't I watch more of the sport? The big one that I was really excited to watch yesterday was Team Archery.
Team Archery? I didn't even know that was a thing. Explain to me Team Archery and like how...
Yeah, it's just like 3-on-3. Each person takes a go at shooting.
Oh, they're shooting each other?
No, they're not. Just get them across from each other.
3-on-3?
It's like paintball, yeah.
Dangerous.
No, so it's 3-on-3 target shooting. And I'm like, oh yeah, this is quite, you know, it's quite good. It's just, there's just a lot of like tens. It's the only problem. It's always like very, very high scoring. So, but yeah, love it.
Okay, fair enough.
I have been watching the Olympics too, obviously, but I watched a movie this week that I thought was interesting from a thinking perspective, but also it kind of threw me strangely as well. I watched Good Luck to You, Leo Grande, which is about a male escort who's paid for services by Emma Thompson's character, who's an aging English teacher.
My goodness.
And it was quite good. It was quite an insightful thing about sex work and some different stuff. But also, it completely threw me because about 3/4 of the way through the movie, Emma Thompson is full frontal nudity.
Oh my God. Fair play.
For a 65-year-old woman to be doing that in a movie, I was not expecting it in the slightest.
Good for you, Emma.
That's how my week has been going. But also, James, I've been lifting weights. I've heard that it's not hard to gain 35 pounds if you hit the gym hard over the summer.
Yes, that's right. And we'll... That's a little teaser for the upcoming episode. But what is this film, Joe? What have you made me watch?
Okay, so this week, James, we decided to pick up the 1993, and we must continuously say 1993, movie called The Program. So it's an American football movie that's set in college football. It's possibly one of the most important sports movies when it comes to college American football that's ever been made. If you're going to make a college football movie, this is how you make it. And also, it kind of informs another movie that we'll look at in the future. There's even some shots from this movie that are directly in other movies that we're going to talk about later.
Oh, wow.
Shot for shot.
My goodness.
We're going to get around to that. I think before we get started with trying to dissect this, it'd be great to hear your haiku for this week.
Okay. This is good. I like this one. I'm quite proud of this one. Under bright lights glare, pressure and big dreams must clash. Football's fleeting blaze.
Oh. It's quite an interesting haiku.
Yeah.
Talk me through the last line of that. Football's fleeting blaze?
Sounded quite cool. We're looking at lots of other haikus and stuff. Football's fleeting blaze. Football is a dream that lots of people aspire to, but we see that it comes at a cost to us. Some people often burn out from the sport. And we see that there's, particularly in the world of college football, there's an awful lot of pressure put on effectively kids. I can hardly call them young men. They're still kind of kids. They're treated like professional athletes, and yet they don't really have the same freedoms and luxuries afforded to them that professional athletes do.
So yeah, in a world where college football has just come back onto the scenes in a major way because EA Sports have decided to make a new video game highlighting college football in their EA Sports NCAA Football 25, this is kind of important right now. It's kind of giving us a bit of a window back into what college football was like in the mid-90s. It's giving us some insight into what the lives and experiences of college football athletes are like and what the coaches are going to go through. Talk me through the plot for this movie, just like real quick, give me some insight into what the plot of this movie is like, or how you at least saw it.
So the program, directed by David Ward, for me offers a gritty and inside look at the pressures and challenges faced by college athletes. Set at the fictional Eastern State University, the film delves into the lives of the team's players and coaches as they navigate the world of college athletics. The movie centers around the ESU Timberwolves, college football striving to turn their fortunes and secure a winning season. The film primarily follows the experiences of several key characters, each grappling with their own personal issues and the high stakes of college football. During the film, we see Coach Sam Winters constantly face crisis management by cleaning up the mess made by players around him. The stakes are massive, and his ability to manage these crises will not only affect the successes of the team, but the future of his job and, of course, the program.
Oh, I love it, James. It is great.
Yeah.
I think really what you've done there is you've given us some real insight into what's happening. So yeah, focus on the coach, focus on the players, focus on the team, focus on the program.
All about the program. Okay.
Absolutely.
Players come and go, but the program is the program. The program is the only thing. It's the only thing that matters in this film.
So yeah, 1993's The Program. Fictitious movie, fictitious school, but not necessarily, James, fictitious problems.
No.
That's something that we're going to look at throughout this movie is...
Absolutely.
Issues that befall college football players and coaches.
Yes. The way that they're presented, a bit heightened, for sure, but I think absolutely things which we, if people follow the sport, will see on the news every year, constantly. There's lots of drama occurring, lots of... issues that have universities are going to have to deal with. And they're, like you said, it sort of covers everything, I think, and is sort of the quintessential college football movie, I think.
I'm just going to give you some key statistics and information for this movie, James. So the writer was a guy called Aaron Latham, but also it was co-written by a guy called David S. Ward, who was the director of the movie. Now, David S. Ward is quite an interesting person because he was actually an Oscar-winning writer and director already. He won an Oscar for The Sting in 1973, which was a movie about sort of like a heist movie with Robert Redford and Paul Newman as the main characters. Fresh off their Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid time, they made this movie, and David S. Ward had written it whilst he was working at a school teaching how to make movies and just hit big with The Sting. Really good movie. He makes this in 1993, but in the same year, he makes another movie, Sleepless in Seattle. And in making that movie, he was Oscar nominated again for the story writing. The only problem we've got, James, is we know you can't write two good movies at once.
Oof.
So you're going to write a great movie, and then you're going to write a movie that goes all over the place and kind of maybe doesn't have what it needs. David S. Ward has got loads of good things going for him. He actually wrote a couple of sports movies that we might cover in the future, Major League and Major League 2. You know, writers and directors are not necessarily always going to be the best same people. Sometimes they are great. You know, sometimes it works. See every Tarantino movie ever made. If he's writing it and directing it, it's probably going to be excellent. But not everybody has those skills, James.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look at Star Wars. You know, Empire Strikes Back wasn't directed by George Lucas. It was directed by Irvin Kershner. So, you know, not everyone can do every aspect of film creating, and I guess this film sort of brings it out a little bit.
Unless you're Sylvester Stallone, and then you can write the movie.
Star in it.
You can get your brother to do some singing on a corner.
Yes, that's right. He's a musician, yeah.
You know, that's when it works really well.
Yeah, we love Sylvester.
Let's talk about people. Let's talk about the characters in this movie. James, we haven't got an out-and-out main character.
No.
Person who's at the top of all of this. Sure, we love James Caan because we've seen three of his movies now. But whilst he plays the head coach in this movie, there's a lot more time spent around the players. Ensemble cast, loads of great actors playing lots of kind of great players. Talk me through some of these players.
The film represents all the relevant issues faced by athletes in college football by encompassing these themes within the characters. The first character worth mentioning is Joe Kane, star quarterback of Eastern State University. He's a Heisman Trophy candidate, but he's carrying the weight of high expectations from his team, coaches, fans, and the media on his shoulders.
Nice.
We're constantly seeing him under immense pressure to lead his team to victory, and this pressure manifests in various forms, from his coach, who needs a winning season to secure his job, to the fans and the media who idolize him. It's clear that this relentless expectation to excel is contributing to Joe's internal struggles, and we see this develop and manifest as Joe turns to alcohol as his coping mechanism. His battle with alcoholism is a critical aspect of his character arc, and the film portrays his drinking as both a means of escape and a destructive force that jeopardizes his career and personal life. Joe's struggle with substance abuse highlights the mental health challenges faced by athletes and the lack of support systems that were around at the time. For me, looking at Joe's character from the 21st century in the year 2024, Joe Kane really needed therapy sooner. I think, it's like, as someone who has gone to therapy myself, it's like I can see so many issues in Joe Kane, which are like, it's amazing that people waited so long for him to really actually receive help. Halfway through the film, we see Joe Kane go into rehab, but to get to that point, he's affected so many people and he's really pushed himself to the point where he almost dies. But like all films, you know, we see Joe go through this journey of redemption, and after going through rehab, we see him overcome his addiction and reclaim control over his life. Eventually, we see Joe sort of overcome his issues with alcohol, as well as the issues he's had regarding his father's relationship with him, and ultimately delivers in the big moment when they have their game against Georgia Tech at the end of the film.
No, I think I like Joe. He's kind of a well-written character. He's got some depth. He's got some feeling about him. He's honest to a fault sometimes. He's honest nearly all the time with all of his teammates. They really like him. They really get on with him. He's got his let's put the women and children to bed and go hunting for dinner.
Some good lines.
The question I've got about Joe from a coaching perspective is he actually a good quarterback, or does he just pull the ball down every now and then and decide to run it?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's the latter. I'm not really that interested in him as a quarterback.
No, you're right.
If he was playing for me, why can't this guy just throw the easy completion to Jefferson in the flat all the time?
That's right.
Just make it easy for yourself.
Yeah.
But he's an interesting character. He's got lots going on. The father is issues, the turn into drink. Really interestingly, the coach does something to him partway through the movie that I think is actually negative. So I think Joe Kane's motorbike provides his catharsis. His ability to go out and ride his motorbike hairlessly and recklessly with a girl on the back of it is the thing that keeps him smiling and alive. Coach knows that the motorbike's not necessarily the best thing for him, but I think if Coach had left the motorbike to be part of Joe's way of escaping and getting out of the situation, he probably would have done quite good. We never hear that Joe's got bad grades.
It's really interesting, yeah.
Struggling with college. But what we do see is that he's got issues with, you know, his home life and people around him. What we do notice is that I think he's the character that Coach Sam Winters cares about the most. He puts his arm around him a little bit more. He talks to him. He gives him a bit more support, more than he does to anybody else. The only thing, James, for me, absolutely terrible casting.
It's a bit of a dull. Yeah.
Like, there are other people in this movie who you can go, oh, he's in this, and oh, they're in that, and I've seen him in something else. With all due respect to Craig Schaefer, you don't see him in anything else. There's no other movies that I've ever seen Craig Schaefer in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's like a mid-30s guy playing an early 20s college football quarterback.
It's not convincing enough for me.
It's a bit much.
I absolutely agree. Particularly for someone who's meant to be like the figure of the team, the main sort of player. He's the Heisman candidate. You expect a little bit more presence, a bit more aura surrounding a player. Moving on, we've got Darnell Jefferson, the star rookie running back, who for me is personally the character I'm most interested in. I think he represents entitlement, which we hear about and see so often within athletes who go to college, because they come from some small town in the middle of nowhere. But when you go to college, you're not that big fish anymore. Okay, you have to start again from the bottom, and it doesn't matter what kind of freshman you are. We're looking at currently in America, Archie Manning is from football royalty, and how he's potentially looking at 2 years as a backup. It doesn't matter where you've come from. You know, you have to start from the bottom, work your way up. And we see Darnell Jefferson challenged in his ability to adapt and see him struggle with maturity in this new hostile environment that is college. He expects to start when he gets to college. He expects to get the girl he wants. He expects his failing classes just to sort of sort themselves out, not put any work in it, go with the flow. That's a real challenge for him. We see him gradually progress. He puts effort into the grades. He treats girls with a bit more respect, loses that selfishness that he initially had as an athlete when it comes to playing, and also has interesting relationships with other athletes around it. For me, for those reasons, I think Darnell was the most interesting athlete in this film.
I think actually what he provides in some ways, just listening to you talk about him there, I think he provides a little bit of our journeyway, an entryway into the ESU football program. He is our catalyst. He's what's traveling us into this.
That's really interesting, yeah.
Most of the players we get to meet properly for the first time in a social setting through Darnell. Get to see the school for the first time through Darnell. We get to have the experience of being recruited through Darnell. Whilst Darnell's not necessarily our title character, he teaches us through his experiences about many of the ways that college football is now working. Boosters giving you a little bit of money on the side, rolling out the red carpet for him when he comes to see what the school is like, being given a very pretty Halle Berry as an academic advisor to show him around the school, but later also to tutor him so that he can stay academically eligible to play for the football program.
That's really interesting.
He's got a really important role within the movie for us of we're seeing things through his eyes.
Because of his inexperience, it then lends to a really good and interesting dynamic between him and another athlete, Alvin Mack.
Nice.
The veteran of the team. Mack is preparing for a future in the pros, experienced in the nuances of college football. He guides younger players like Darnell Jefferson on how to make most of the opportunities available, how to avoid the risks that athletes go through, as well as how to coast by in studies to make the college experience easier. I think if the team had Joe Kane as the Heisman candidate, I think Alvin Mack is really actually the heart of this team.
Absolutely.
We see the offense struggle. Once Joe goes on rehab, it becomes much more the defense has to win games. And we see Alvin Mack dominate. And not just in terms of his on-the-field performances, but off the field as well. He's very much the mentor of this team, and he's very engaged in the classroom. He's clearly got the smarts to end up being, you know, a future pro footballer. All of that makes it such a shame when he ultimately goes through an injury which puts his entire football future into question.
There's a couple of guys who have pure purpose. His motivation to do all the things that he does, pull his family out of the life that they have been living by him going to be a pro football player.
I loved his introduction.
Giving the mum the door knocker.
I was so confused at the time. I'm like, is he just a bit of an idiot? And then he says, and his mum, when he receives this present, is also confused. But he says, one day, mum, I'm going to give you a house to go with that door knocker.
Yeah.
I love that. I feel like I'm now rooting for this guy. That is the reason why so many NFL players do what they do.
Yeah.
It's to provide that generational wealth. It's to help their family.
100%. He's a great character from a perspective of he's got some of the best lines in the movie.
Yes.
He's got this wonderful idiosyncratic personality where you're just like, this guy's so amazing.
Great, great trash talking. Just so much.
Brilliant. Yeah, top notch. And weirdly, the only thing that makes him come undone in the whole movie is his trash talk. He doesn't fall foul of any of the other things that are going on. He's going and doing his study hall. He's doing everything he can to stay eligible. Jefferson's guiding us through. We're going on a journey with Jefferson through college football. He's our oracle of how college football works for the players, right? He says, yeah, well, you know, boosters are going to give you money. But if you can't work out how that works, give me that money. I'm going to take care of it for you. He's the one who tells Joe at the start of the movie, hey, you know, we're going to be better next year. Don't worry about it. He is the true captain of the whole program.
That's right.
He is the guy at the top of the pyramid. He's the guy that everybody's looking to say, hey, if we need a playmaking, Alvin's going to make it.
Yeah, you make some really good points. It's like the coach's job is to enforce the rules, the objective, things you have to follow as an athlete. Alvin Mack's role is the sort of stuff which you're not told as an athlete. It's the stuff that you have to sort of figure out. And Alvin is sort of the guide for someone like Jefferson as he's going through college. He's very much a mentoring character who brings a lot of calming energy when you see him on the screen. Unlike Steve Latimer, who is another defensive player, arguably the most controversial character on this team. Wouldn't you say, Joe?
I think he's definitely got some controversial elements to him.
Yes.
I would say I have been around American football teams for long enough to know that there is one of these players on every team.
Yeah.
There is always an older guy who shows the younger guys how to get it done. There's always the young guy who's trying to find out how it works. Mm-hmm. There's always that character who is a bit unsure of his own abilities and, you know, might be a bit wayward on the drink from time to time.
Yeah.
The worrying thing about the Latimer characters is I've once heard somebody say every good team needs a couple of psychopaths on it. And Latimer is one of the crazy guys. He is one of the psychopaths.
Yeah. So a controversial character on the team, Steve finally earns a starting spot, partly due to gaining 35 pounds, that's about 15 kilos to our European audience, of questionably earned muscle on the team during the summer.
Listen, James, it is completely normal for an athlete to gain 35 pounds over a summer if you hit the gym hard enough.
The gain of lean muscle, yeah. Yeah, yeah, sure. Whatever, Joe. Steve represents desire and lust to get what he wants both on the field by taking performance-enhancing drugs as well as off the field through negative relationships with women we see.
Oh!
Yeah.
Negative relationships with women.
Political way of saying it.
Yeah, this is, I think, really is a precautionary tale of steroids, okay? Steroids can have an insane effect upon your body, right?
For sure.
They can push you further than your body would usually be able to achieve, but there are some negative examples that come with that. Hyper-aggressiveness, sexual desire and lust that he might feel. Is it just testosterone? Mm-hmm. Is it everything? Is it...
Tren? We don't know. Something in a needle.
He gets off the juice at one point and his performance goes down as a result of it.
That's right. He's unable to make that touchdown-saving tackle. Yeah. You know, he's defeated and it's like, it's because I'm not taking steroids, damn it.
So he gets back on the juice.
Back on the juice.
And hides it. When this movie came out, there was quite a lot of reviews that said that this movie was an insight into the world of college football, but also how easy it is to pass a drug test. Which, yeah, if nobody's watching you, you know, urinate in the bottle, you could get away with sneaking some sneaky urine in there. Mm-hmm. But also, this is the only time in any movie I've ever seen where somebody does a full oil change of dirty and clean urine.
Ridiculous.
So that he can pass clean urine in a test that he needs to pass later on. Talking about Steve, there are some amazing things. Steve just wants to contribute. That's the thing that I love about Steve in some ways, is he just wants to contribute. Been on special teams player for the last 3 years. He wants to be starting defense. When he wins starting defense, he's so happy about it.
That's right.
But the reality is he just wants to be part of the team and he just wants to help.
Here's those exact words. He wants a seat at the table.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so who else have you got for me?
We see other athletes in this film. There's Ray, the running back, who's sort of at odds with Jefferson. But that's sort of it. I think, you know, and probably for a good reason. If there were too many more athletes, I think everyone's story would sort of get diluted a bit. So, Joe, who's our main coach? Talk me through James Caan.
James Caan!
James Caan is back.
No longer an athlete, James. No longer a man dying of testicular cancer, no longer a rollerballing maniac, ready and hell-bent to be a gladiator and beat everybody around him into a bloody pulp.
Yep.
Just to continue to win.
Yep.
Now, James Caan is coach Sam Winters, who he's clearly won at some point in the past, because I'm pretty sure he's wearing a championship ring most of the movie. But this is the most cynical coach view of any coach I've ever seen in a movie. So he will do almost anything to win, lie as a recruiter, turn a blind eye to steroid use within the program, probably turn a blind eye to academic issues, players being paid money issues. All he really cares about is continue to make sure the program keeps going, raise the high-level athletes to what they need to be, get them off to the NFL, bring in the next guys, continue to stay in my role, continue to stay successful, continue to do the job that I'm going to do. There's some questions about Sam Winters. He is a grey character when it comes to coaching. Is he a good coach? So he does support Joe Kane throughout the movie quite nicely. He goes and visits Alvin Mack in the hospital when he gets hurt. You know, and he feels pressure from the alumni at certain points. Always listens to his assistant coaches, who are called Clayton and Humes. Got no idea about who they are. I don't know which one of them coaches offense or defense.
Sometimes they're just a voice, aren't they? You just hear them in the background. You don't actually see...
Yeah, the Bert and Ernie of this movie, pretty much. They're just there in the background. It was like, we need some assistant coaches. Get a tall black guy. Get a fat white guy. Who coaches offense or defense? Who cares? All we care about is Sam Winters is going to call offense when it really matters, right, on the field, right?
But also, he runs the defensive meetings. So it's like, he's just doing everything.
He is.
You know, he's doing recruitment, he's doing offense, he's doing defense, he's got to do the meetings with the school in terms of academic conduct. He is just overloaded with responsibilities.
Far too much things going on for him. And his daughter is at the school too.
Oh my God.
His daughter's studying at Eastern State.
Far too close with football players. Yeah, she thought he loved him.
I think James Caan is the right pick for a football coach. I think he plays a football coach well, but how much does he actually know about football?
Yes.
Okay, here's a question. There's different types of coaches in the world. You've got the X's and O's guy. You've got the motivator. You've got the recruiter. You know, you've got those three different major archetypes of types of coach. This guy, which one is he? I mean, his recruitment seems okay. I don't see him do anything X's and O's wise that makes me go, wow, this is going to be cool and interesting. He might be a master motivator, but he only motivates a few people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And he's really good at like flipping a table with Gatorade on it.
I'd say with college football, there's an interesting extra sort of role, which you don't necessarily see in the NFL, which is CEO.
Mm, that's a great point.
He has to almost run the college program like a business, and he's got to get the most out of the people around him as possible. Because in the NFL, you can build your team around a handful of players which are going to be there for 10 years that you know you can rely on. And then you sort of have role players that come in and around. You know, you've got a GM who's in charge of player personnel. You know, you're just so purely focused on the coordinators you have around you. College football, players are only there for 3 years. He's got to be constantly looking at and bringing in new players to come around and to join the team. The turnover in college football is much faster than the NFL.
Yeah.
Players are only in college for 3 years and then they're out. And then he's got to find the next star quarterback to fill in the team. It's really much more title being the program shows that the important thing about this film is the program success.
Yeah.
And ultimately, I think everything that James Caan does as the head coach is for the benefit of the program. He says the right things to encourage Joe Kane when he's having his issues. When he's seeing Jefferson struggle, adapt as being a rookie and being a freshman at college. As a coach, you are the one constant at a program, and therefore you're kind of like the CEO, because he knows that the player turnover is so fast. He knows that coordinators in college tend to have quite a fast turnover too, because he knows that there are so many jobs available. People are going to be looking, if they're a coordinator somewhere, they want to be a head coach somewhere else. If they're an assistant coach there, they want to go up and promote to the next level. It's a stepping stone. But he himself, he's got to stay there. And in general, you know, the head coach position in college tends to be slightly more long-standing than being a head coach in the NFL. So I'd say that there's a unique sort of perspective of being a head coach that only exists in college football rather than the NFL. And that's I think James Caan does a pretty good job in bringing that out.
I would agree. I think one of the places, another place where this movie falls down a little bit, in the coaching. Because you could add in Khan's character, you know, there's no background, there's no history, there's no...
Mm-hmm.
The school dean never turns back and says, look, we're going to send you back to bumfuck West Virginia if this doesn't work out for you. You never really see
right
what his bottom could be. And you also never really see what his top can be.
Sure.
I think it does show quite nicely that, you know, college football year in, year out is measured by wins and losses and whether or not you get to a bowl. The big thing for you as a college football coach at that time was, can you make it to a major bowl, one of the big four, or can you make it to a higher level bowl? That Winters is trying his hardest to make it into any bowl game that he can and trying to win a conference championship and make it all work.
That's the metric of success, right? It's kind of like, if you make the bowl game, that's good enough generally. Yeah, that keeps the money going, keeps the job safe. That's what he wants.
Absolutely. And he is cynical, questionable morals a lot of the time, outweighed by the human side of him that we see throughout the course of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, vouching for Bobby to be able to come back and play for the team whilst Joe's away in rehab, whether that's trying to keep Joe out of prison with the DUI situation, going and visiting Alvin Mack in the hospital after the career-ending injury to give him some support. He's that CEO who is still top-down, the glue for ESU.
Perfect. Yeah.
Nice. It's a question that we always ask in every episode, James. Do they win?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, they do.
Yeah. They win. I think they win the conference championship. They win the conference championship.
Yes. They win the game before the bowl game.
Yeah. So they make it
yeah.
to the bowl game, which is the big goal.
Which is the goal.
But there are some costs along the way.
That's right.
Joe Kane spends some time in rehab. Latimer does his steroids and comes off his steroids, goes back onto his steroids. They lose Alvin Mack, their mercurial
great word
team captain. You know, and then they're able to integrate Darnell Jefferson into being a key point. Interestingly, something that, unless you really pay attention to what's happening and where people are at in their careers, this isn't Joe Kane's senior year.
No.
Which you might think it would be.
No, you're right. Yeah.
He's in his junior year. He's got another year after this.
I think this film is so centralized around individual stories and how they overcome their challenges that how the team ends up winning doesn't really matter. But we see moments in which players are overcoming certain issues. So we see Joe Kane overcome his stresses and inability to cope with high pressure situations when he leads that winning drive for ESU. Jefferson overcome his sort of selfishness, conflict with fellow running back Ray, who is constantly at odds with him, in the past deliberately missed blocks to kind of make Jefferson look bad. And at the end of the film, we see Ray make a really amazing play which helps Jefferson score a touchdown. And both of them, who were previously at odds with each other, sort of show finally mutual respect towards each other.
Okay.
We also see Steve Latimer make a great play.
Yeah, but Steve has a bounce back play, doesn't he? He's still got elements of he can only make that play if he's on steroids.
That's the weird thing.
He's earned his seat at the table, whether that's a nefarious seat at the table or not. He's been there. He's done his bit. He's done his part. Something that I'd like to just pause and think about here is we're going to talk about another movie probably in, I don't know, 400 episodes, one of our favorite sports and American football movies.
That's right. Yeah.
Any Given Sunday. But I want us to just have a think about this ahead of time. Two players at odds with each other eventually work together to make the play to make it work.
Oh my God.
Well, tell me that that's not Willie Beeman and J-Man in the Dallas game in Any Given Sunday.
Yes.
Okay.
That's literally it.
Tell me that a player doesn't make an incredible, potentially dangerous physical sacrifice to keep his team in the game.
Yeah.
Defensively, James.
There we are.
Tell me somebody doesn't do that.
Oh my God. When Lawrence Taylor makes the fourth down stop, comes off on the stretcher.
Yep. Is very close to Steve Latimer. And they're saying to him, hey, we don't like this, how it's going to affect your health in the future if you continue to do it. Is there a coach in Any Given Sunday that is similar to the coach that James Caan plays in?
Stop. That's what he does. That's what he has to do to get the most out of the players around him.
This is...
Oh my God.
It's the same...
It's the same film.
Film, but from a different perspective, right? This is Any Given Sunday from a perspective of college football.
But feels much more refined because it has Ridley Scott's
absolutely
your lovely touch on it.
James, all you need in Any Given Sunday for it to be exactly the same movie as this is for LT's character to start spouting, hit the tight end so hard his girlfriend dies, kill everybody in a film room review. That's the only thing that is different from these two movies.
He probably said that, you know, that his character would have said that, or he would have said that at the Giants, something similar, I can imagine.
Listen, I've read the Lawrence Taylor autobiography, and he used to sleep through a lot of meetings. He just knew what he was doing when he turned up on game day.
That's LTE, man. Fair enough.
A little bit of movie magic for you, James. Scripts, as we mentioned, David S. Ward wrote this. I think it's quite well written. I think it taps into the heart of college football. A lot of the words that people use are authentic and real, and it feels like what a college football player would say. Yes, we do get a leadership character in Alvin Mack, but some of those scenes where people are talking, the trash talk is, I think the trash talk in this movie is quite high level.
Very high level. This is a professional trash talker. I wish you had some of them written down.
I don't know whether or not Alvin Mack comes up with those things himself as the actor, and they just say like, hey, just riff on this and have a go.
Or are they actual perhaps recallings of what some trash talk someone's given to you?
Has David S. Ward just written this himself and said, this is the script, this is what you're going to say.
This person accused me of impregnating their sister. They sort of gaslit themselves into getting really pissed off with me.
Yeah.
So that they could play better. They used it as a kind of, you know, as a winning strategy in the game, which I thought was, that's just brilliant.
I think Alvin Max, like, his trash talk, yes, it might be to put them off, but I think it's also to get him psyched up and going.
Yes.
Like, he makes up this story about this guy because then he can go out there and hurt him, right?
Exactly.
It's amazing. And I'm not going to recall back at all to the fact that in Any Given Sunday, Lawrence Taylor starts calling out people and doing trash talk at all. Because he doesn't do that, James. It never happens. Dizzy, I'm going to be picking peanuts out of your ass.
You'll be spitting shoelaces. Oh my God.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh. Sets-wise, shot at South Carolina. I think the stadium at South Carolina is really good for this level.
It's nice, yeah.
And it shot really well. Used famously by South Carolina Gamecocks, but similar sort of colours. And they did a lot of their externals and internals of schools at Duke University, which is actually quite highly regarded as a university. I think this could maybe be one of the first movies to use an inside helmet shot.
Wow.
It's behind the face mask. I want to do a little bit more research on this, but I think that's possibly one of the first times that we get an inside helmet shot. The only thing that puts me off in this whole movie when we're talking about watching the football plays is there's often talk by the players as they're running.
Are they speaking or is it like mental thinking?
He might be saying it in his head. You might be right. Music-wise, nothing special. I think it uses like Thunderstruck in there for one of the practice scenes. Can Joe Kane throw a football or ball?
There might have been some stuntmen in there. I saw there were some times where he's throwing ducks, but there was also some times where he's throwing perfect spirals. I'm thinking, they got someone else. You can hide a face. You can hide a face under a helmet.
And then effects-wise and sort of special cameos, Bo Schembechler, really famous Michigan coach, plays himself in this movie and does some of the commentary. But there's also Lynn Swan, who's very famously played for the Steelers, and he's doing the sideline commentary. There's plenty of really cool stuff that gives you a college football vibe. Here's a question I'd like to ask you before we move on to our final few questions. Could you make this movie now?
I think so. Maybe the tone of in which it was delivered back then in the 90s is sort of very much 90s-esque. It might be a bit dated. So in order for it to feel well-suited in the 21st century, it might be a bit heavy. And I feel like it would be a massive contrast for it to be entertaining, but then include steroid use, to include a scene when a girl almost gets raped. I think it would be such a mess to kind of deal with now. Equally, I feel like at the time, I think now also college football is cleaned up so much in terms of the steroid use, in terms of kind of misconduct from players, because there's so much now at stake for these players in terms of leaving millions of dollars on the table when they go pro.
Absolutely.
I feel like the stuff which we see then is now sort of a relic of the past. I'm not sure we could see that sort of happen now. Similar with Any Given Sunday, I think a lot of it is sort of, it's happened and it's gone. I think the game's changed too much.
Here's my pitch, right? So remake this movie or make a newer version of it. It's 31 years old, this movie. So remake it. We can still have some issues, but instead of Joe Kane having a drinking problem and riding around on his motorbike, he is constantly worried about his social media presence being ruined. Okay?
Yes.
Instead of Alvin Max wanting to make it big, but because there's NIL deals now, he is making it big. The question is his draft stock dropping in his pursuit to go towards the NFL? Could he be talking to different agents? Could he be going through those kind of situations? Could we look at that? You know, Steve Latimer, is this a drugs perspective of steroids epidemic, or is it recreational drug problem? Is it a problem with regards
painkillers,
or is it a problem with regards, you know, use of other kinds of recreational drugs that he's got an issue with? Mm-hmm. That aren't necessarily about his on-the-field performance, but they're about
how he copes,
his demons off the field, potentially. Absolutely. And then I think you would have Darnell Jefferson get Halle Berry pregnant in this movie, and then him having to deal with the fact that he's going to be a baby daddy and he's got to continue to be a football player at the same time. Because, you know, if you look at the Tyreek Hill kind of way of living your life at the moment, 8 different children by...
Five different mothers or something.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, maybe there would be a bit more insight into aggressive pursuit of American football players by girls who want to find their ticket out of...
mediocrity.
With a pro athlete. I think that'd be a quite interesting way of looking.
I think that's brilliant. Those are all amazing sort of translations from sort of... It's the same movie, but just sort of 21st century version.
Oh, yeah. And all the time, those players would be threatening to be transferring out through the transfer portal.
Yes, constantly.
You know, the thing that we're missing, I think, is assistant coaches who are pushing the head coach to maybe lose his job, you know, move out of the way, or he's a bit, you know, he's a bit old, or whatever it might be.
I think that would be so good, because we've seen recently the great Nick Saban, who was kind of a bit like Coach Winters, who's very much about the program. He's not about individuals. He's trying to keep everything under control. If we had some sort of character that was kind of under pressure into how the new changes of NIL and transfers and players coming and going, I think that could be really interesting. There's probably one currently in the works as we're speaking.
Roll on the program 2025. That's what I say. Bring us those characters, bring us those people.
Mm-hmm.
And bring us a head coach that's some different challenges, some different views. So is it art or is it entertainment, James?
I think it can be art. It's one of those films which is great ideas, great concept. It's just maybe if they had a different director with a different sort of vision in bringing it out, in how do we display these sort of themes and ideas, I think it would be probably a more memorable, iconic movie.
Is this movie thought-provoking, or did it make you laugh and get excited and feel emotions like, yeah, amazing? Was it a pro... I think most of the sports movies that we watch can say, is this a pro sports movie? Or is this, say, an anti-sports movie? It's got anti-sports movie sentiments in it, but because it's doing so many things where it gives you great throwaway lines like...
Defense! Seat at the table!
Yeah. I think it's an entertainment movie. I think it means different things for people of different ages, but I think ultimately... You stick this on in a university, you know, a college football house these days, people would just start implementing those things into who they are and their personality. They'd just be doing these things all the time. The life imitates art kind of stuff is it's much more lifey entertainment than it is arty. I can see how this movie could have taken two or three different turns and it would be a bit more art.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it's an entertainment movie. Cool. I would like to ask you, what you think your TikTok moment from this movie is.
So I knew this was going to be my TikTok moment the moment I saw it in the film. And it's from our good favourite Alvin Mack, where he is firstly...
Are we talking film room here?
We're talking about film room here. We're talking about him, you know, first studying with his tutor, unable to recall the main cities featured in the Punic Wars, but then conversely being able to perfectly identify and recall the defenses he needs to have in preparation for Mississippi State. I just think it perfectly sort of shows what the priorities are of college athletes and college students, student athletes, and that the education side of college, they've just got to get through it. Okay, they're not going to need to know what the Punic Wars, you know, were fought between. But everything he does in the classroom, in the field, that's in preparation for his bigger goal, which is to be an NFL pro and to provide for his family. So I love that moment. It's got some funny lines, maybe some stuff which is slightly hyperbolic that, you know, you wouldn't necessarily hear, but it's definitely a memorable moment, and that, I can absolutely turn into a TikTok moment.
And I guess a question I've got to ask, just from a perspective of your age, is have you ever seen anybody use a slide deck?
No. Oh, no. Absolutely not. Oh, no, my dad has one, which he has to like blow the dust off every couple of years to show his childhood photos. But that's literally it.
I think you're right. If I was going to choose a TikTok moment, it would be the other moment from it where it's Steve Latimer smashing his, you know, starting defense. Place at the table, smash your head through a window.
Table.
The assistant coach is saying, make sure Coach Winters doesn't find out about this. But then again, I also think the one that I like is where the two assistant coaches, Clayton and Humes, are sitting there watching Latimer like row up, you know, what looks like 120 kg just to do 120 kg like shoulder just press above his head, and then slam it onto the ground, and then weirdly like do like really quick stampy feet and like shake his arms. And I'm like,
yeah,
very normal gym activity, very very normal. Not crazy at all. I think that's great, James. I really like your TikTok moments. And I think this is full of great TikTok moments. I am looking forward to you producing some really cool TikToks of our own in preparation for this this episode. Really simple, great question. My favorite question to ask you. Did you enjoy it?
I did. Yes. I think whilst it's execution, we've talked about some of the things, some inconsistencies that were in the film. It was definitely an enjoyable film. I think it genuinely did bring to light pretty much all of the big issues that college football players faced.
I think they're faced.
Yeah.
Because I don't think they face them anymore. I think some of them do.
No, you're right.
With NIL, does it matter if a booster comes and gives you $500 in a envelope? No, because you're getting paid millions.
No, you're right, faced. I think a lot of the issues aren't here anymore. So the film kind of as a portal into the past of what college football was like. And whilst it's obviously very heightened, very sort of exaggerated, I think this film sort of serves as the kind of quintessential college football film. I think it's definitely a film which anyone interested in the sport should check out.
I love it. I think you're exactly right. You can watch other college football films like We Are Marshall or whatever these movies that might come along in the future that we're going to talk about. But
There's a lot. There's almost as much. There's probably more. There might be more college films than NFL films.
Very possibly.
Because it's kind of like a teenage. It's kind of like a teenage flick kind of thing. But
more high, definitely more high school, I think, than there is even college. But
it's
up there. It's up there. And then, is it a champion? Is this a champion movie? Or is it a challenger? Is it a contender? Is it just another guy?
So far, with the films we've done so far, we've had a lot of contenders. We've had a lot of near ones. This is the closest I've seen to potentially being a champion. I think it's, we want to reserve the title of champion to a select few films as we do these episodes.
Agreed.
However, I just think so many college films will be focusing on specific characters and will just be sort of won't be as complex in terms of the amount of themes that they're trying to tackle. I just feel like this film is so loaded with ideas going on that I want to call it a champion.
James, I can't accept that this is a champion movie.
No.
It's not quite where it needs to be, unfortunately for me.
I think you're probably right. It's like I want it to be a champion, but it's just close.
It's not quite there. I think if you take the writing of this movie, I think if you recast some of the, not all of the parts, just some of them.
Yeah.
I think you make this movie into something that's an absolute monster.
You're right.
And I think it's the greatest American football movie that's ever been made in a truth sense.
Yes.
Of what real, if we're talking about true football, where people talk about the good, the bad, the dirty, the clean, the light, the dark of American football, there is this, there is Any Given Sunday,
yes,
and there is not much else that talks about everything,
absolutely,
good, bad, or indifferent that is happening to football players,
absolutely,
and that's why this is it's really special,
absolutely.
And I think if you're an American football person, or if you've gotten into watching American football over the last few years, this is a great watch because it gives you some insight, especially if you've not spent a lot of time, which most British people definitely haven't done, spent a lot of time around and watching college football.
Mm-hmm.
That it's a different environment, it's a different experience. And I think for me, when I first watched this, aged 18 with my teammates, who this was the movie before Any Given Sunday, this was the movie where people were like, oh my God, yes, we're watching the program tonight. Because you would sit there and you just make all the quotes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Get out on your motorbike, do something crazy, go drinking with your buddies and have a bar fight. All those really cool things that we like. That being said, the round out quote for today's episode, I think, brings me to talking about that duality, the quote from the person this week. So this is Eric Burdon, and he says, inside each of us there is a seed of both good and evil. There is a constant struggle as to which one will win, and one cannot exist without the other. And for me, when we talk about the program, that is why this movie is so good. It gives us the lightness and it gives us the darkness. It isn't just pushing forwards one idea of racial segregation. It's not pushing forward one idea of old school coach, young players. It's given us lots and lots of different ideas to think about and lots of different themes to think about.
Mm-hmm.
And without the darkness of this movie, its light could not shine. And without the lightness of this movie, the darkness wouldn't have as much play in what it does for us.
Absolutely. Very multifaceted movie. It was.
Listen, I'd like to thank everybody this week for coming and joining us on this journey with 1993's The Programme. It is the end, James, of our James Caan series. It's time to finally put away the square-shouldered athlete come coach into his box for a little bit longer until maybe he rises up another time. James Caan passed away in 2022. I salute you, sir, for the gifts that you gave us in sports movies, the journeys that you took us on from Brian's Song, the dystopian future of Rollerball, and even on to the hyper-realistic, honest depiction of college football in 1993 to The Programme. You, sir, we salute you. Thank you so much. James, it's time to go out. It's time to go and research and find some new movies. There will be champions, and we will find them.
Oh, amazing. Can't wait. Thank you, everyone.
Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.